Welcome to the Democratic Candidate Forum for the primary election. The election is on Tuesday, March 17th. This forum is sponsored by the League of Women Voters of McDonough County. I'm Sally Egler, Voter Service Chair for the League. We are grateful for the services of the WIU Broadcasting Department staff and students with their leadership of News Director Emily Manley. This program is being live streamed on WIU's News 3 YouTube channel and local channel 3. This forum is being taped for broadcast on channel 15 daily from Friday, February 28th through Election Day, March 17th. The schedule changes from day to day, but it can be found on News 3's website, news3wiu.com. Only one race on the ballot is contested, the race for Illinois State Representative from the 93rd District. We welcome Emiliano Vera and Scott Stoll, both seeking the Democratic nomination. The winner will face Republican incumbent Noreen Hammond in the general election next fall. Hammond has been in office since December 2010, when she was approved to the vacancy of the late Representative Rich Myers. Now let me introduce the moderators for tonight's event. Rich Egger, News Director for Tri-States Public Radio, and Devin Brooks, WIU's News 3 Executive Producer and Anchor. Welcome, gentlemen.
Thanks, Sally. The format for tonight's program will be as follows. Each candidate will have up to 2 minutes to introduce himself, and then both will be asked questions submitted by League members and the public. We will alternate who goes first. Each candidate can take up to 2 minutes to answer. Finally, the candidates will each have 2 minutes to give a concluding statement.
Well, Rich, we first want to remind voters that the 93rd District covers the 8 West Central counties in Illinois. They include all or part of the following: Knox, Fulton, Warren, McDonough, Schuyler, Cass, Brown, and Mason. There is a map on the screen of the 93rd District, courtesy of the Illinois Board of Elections.
We want to tell you a bit about the candidates here tonight. Vera is 26 years old and is a native of Bushnell. He currently works as a full-time substitute and resource teacher in the Bushnell Prairie City School District. Scott Stoll is 40 years old, originally from the village of Durand in northern Illinois, but he has lived in Rushville for more than 10 years with his wife and 3 daughters. Stoll is the COO for the Moreland and Devitt Pharmacy Company in Rushville.
All right. Well, Rich, let's get started. Emiliano, we will start with you. You are both new to campaigning for state office. How do you plan to defeat an incumbent who has overcome strong challenges in the past?
Well, I have now 6 years of campaign experience going against establishment incumbents. And I got started on my political career when I was in college, taking on the Chicago Democratic machine, actually. And the very first race that I was involved in as a volunteer, out knocking doors, making phone calls, and talking to people, real working people, was on an alderman race where we were going up against the mayor's hand-picked 18-year incumbent, and with a massive turnout of working people through the grassroots partnerships that we developed throughout the city, we were able to defeat a hand-picked corporate incumbent by over 30 points. And I've been doing that ever since. Some races that we've done, I've lost, all very narrowly. I worked on John Curtis's campaign in this district in 2018. We lost by maybe 5 points. And in that race, I became very, very familiar with the weaknesses that Noreen Hammond has. And I decided to get into this race because I think I am the person that this district can vote for as a Democrat, considering how unpopular the Democratic Party is in Western Illinois because it is seen as a party of the establishment and a party of those big corporate interests that have been doing this district and the working people of this district wrong for so long.
All right, Scott, 2 minutes.
Sure. So, you know, I've been able to, as a city councilman in Rushville for the past 3 years, I've had the opportunity of sitting at a bipartisan table. And I've had the opportunity, of course, of walking around, knocking on doors in Rushville during my campaign as alderman, also as a campaign for mayoral campaign in Rushville as well, and then now walking through and talking with everybody. And what I'm seeing out there as far as how an incumbent can be beat, especially like Noreen, is there are a ton of opportunities. People are thirsting for a change, for a new voice, for a fresh view of how we can help working class people, how we can help small businesses, how we can help infrastructure. Right now, I believe that everybody has seen where the current establishment, the current representative has sat on her hands for 9 years, and that has caused more problems. We've seen it here at WIU, where the budget impasse was very, very poorly taken, and we've seen the issues that she has come across where she just has not been active in our communities. Where I have been active in our communities, I've worked hard in Rushville community, I've worked hard in all of the communities in which my business serves in, and we have been extremely community-minded. We've seen the hurt that has gone on, we've seen the financial difficulties that have gone on, and I can tell you right now that the time for change is now, and we've seen that in the last two campaigns that John Curtis has run with a narrow defeat.
Now on to the second question. Scott, you're up first. More neutral methods of drawing legislative districts have been proposed for the state. We have a census coming up this spring, and new districts will be drawn. What are your views on how districts should be drawn?
I'm a big believer in using a third-party format for drawing districts, because there is just too much gerrymandering going on right now, and you can see the infighting in Springfield. I mean, it's constant, you know, regardless of what issues there are out there. But this one in particular, you know, we've seen the Republican Party want to draw their own districts to their benefit. I'm sure you can, you know, anybody could say the same thing about the Democratic Party. And I think that the logical solution to this would be to have a third party view of that, take out the gerrymandering, and look at what is best for the voters at hand. Look at what is best for the people that we're trying to serve, not what is run by a political machine, not as one that is run by folks that don't have any idea of being in those particular districts. So that would be my view on it. I think a third party is absolutely needed in order to have a fair view of what we're trying to accomplish. And
Emiliano, what are your views on how legislative districts should be drawn?
I agree wholeheartedly. There needs to be an independent third-party commission that is in charge of drawing district boundaries. This is something that we've been fighting for at the Supreme Court, even in multiple states across the country. And it just so happens that in Illinois, it is the Democratic Party that controls what is the redistricting commissions. So, because we're the ones in power. Usually we see it's the Republican Party that is the one in power and gerrymandering, but this is truly a bipartisan issue. I would say the main difference is that I have, one, actually signed the petition that is currently going around that is in favor of the redistricting committee, and also I am running an independent campaign that has not been funded by the corporate establishment of the Democratic Party, because we can all say whatever we want, but in reality, when you get to Springfield, you are going to do what the will is of the people who funded your campaign. And I'm sure many of you have been having some mailers coming around, funded by Mike Madigan's PACs for Scott. And I don't think that an independent Democratic legislature for this district, which is the only Democratic legislature that will win in this district, is going to ultimately go against the people who gave them $10,000 or $20,000, who was running their campaign for them. I've been funded by grassroots donors, and I am able to listen to the people of this district because you're the ones who are going to put me into power, not Madigan.
All right, thank you both. Emiliano, you will answer this next question first. What are your ideas about how to support and promote economic development in the region?
So Democrats and Republicans have been talking about economic development. We need to support small businesses. We need to grow jobs. That is something that if you look on Noreen's website, she says the exact same thing. Pretty much the same fluffy words that are on Scott's website. I think I am the only candidate who is calling for direct public investment into our economy. Look at the way that we have made supposed economic growth in this district and across the country for the past 30, 40 years or so. It has been with things like TIPS. It's been with incentives to businesses, basically giving public taxpayer dollars to private companies that benefits them for their profits. So like in Bushnell, we have a Dollar General that has a, I think 10, 15 year maybe, property tax break. We're giving them tax breaks to beg them, and every community in this state begs businesses to come into their community by offering them some type of bribe, basically. It's a race to the bottom. I am the only person who's saying, if we are spending public taxpayer dollars to generate jobs, we should not be sending those dollars into the pockets of wealthy corporations. We should be spending that money directly and creating the only good jobs that are here in this area, and that is public jobs. So that means a strong public jobs program that includes through the Clean Energy Jobs Act, which will provide public green energy jobs to communities all across the state, and also by investing in the public jobs that we already have, like Western, and making sure that the thousands of jobs that could be being done in the state but are not because we simply are not investing in it are being done.
Scott, your turn.
So I'm a firm believer in that the only one sitting at this table right here that has understood what economic development does and in a town, a small town, and anybody that has worked in it is myself. I am the economic development chair of Rushville. I have worked wholeheartedly with TIF dollars, with grants, with funding, and yes, Emiliano is correct. Some of those TIF dollars, some of those tax abatements, they do go to large corporations. He's correct about that. That does happen. However, I've worked more in the last 3 years with small business owners and people that are coming out of high school, people that are coming out of college that want to be entrepreneurs. They are the ones that are looking for a new, for a new start, for advancement. We're seeing too many of our main streets go dark in our small communities, and we're letting that happen by not focusing on how we can help them and how we can support them. Those dollars that are going in, I'm working on one right now, that those dollars that are going in are helping families. Those help put food on the table for their kids or send their daughter to dance class. Okay, these dollars, if used correctly, TIF and any other grants that might be worked on, can be a substantial benefit to these small communities. I've worked in it. I know about it, I'm experienced in it, and I know that I'm the only one that has actually physically worked on it and dealt through all of those issues with local business owners.
Thank you, both of you. Scott, it's now your turn to start. Property taxes in our area are considered burdensome. What would you propose to relieve that burden without damaging funding for education?
Well, actually, I think it actually works hand in hand, in my opinion. You know, my ideas of education are that we need to fund our public education wholeheartedly. We need state dollars to go back into our public education, okay? By putting state dollars into public education, you're not relying on increased property taxes to fund those schools, okay? My ideas of funding public education are gonna come from things like the Fair Tax Program, and injecting money that we can give to support not only the teachers that are in there, but we can also support all the programs that are in there. So it's essentially a kill two birds with one stone scenario, because you can fund the schools, you can do the things that you need to do from a public education standpoint, and help release and relieve the tax dollar, the property tax burden that is going on right now in our communities, because it is a real burden. And as we can see, there are a lot of potential tax dollars, whether it be by the new cannabis taxes, by the fair tax program that will be coming out on the ballot in November. All of these things, if utilized correctly and if managed correctly within our budget, can be put towards substantial education benefits within our community, and thus they can be also used from a property tax burden benefit as well.
Emiliano, what would you propose to relieve the property tax burden without damaging funding for education?
So it's true. The fair tax is one of the things that we absolutely need to pass in Illinois, because every other state around us, except for Indiana, it already runs on a fair tax. So when people say taxes in Illinois are high, taxes in Illinois suck, well, guess what? It is true. They are unfair. Illinois has the seventh most regressive tax rate of any state in the country. That means the poorer you are, the more you pay in taxes in Illinois. Someone at the top 1% is paying around 7% of their total income in combined state and local taxes to Illinois. Somebody in the bottom 20% is paying 14%. Now, what hits middle class people really hard and homeowners is the property taxes that we rely on. And I have been a strong supporter of Senator Andy Menard's Senate Bill 1 that would shift the education funding burden away from local property taxes. That is a way that is unjust and damaging to our communities, especially communities like Macomb that have been shrinking and therefore have to increase their property taxes just to keep the same level of quality of our schools, and instead asks that we fund our education system from the state central funds just like any other program. And I would also say that the main difference, once again, between my opponent and I is that I have been actively working for the passage of these bills and working for candidates who have been in support of these bills. In my work for John Curtis, in my work for Greg Johnson for State Senate, and I have been out since I declared and since before I declared, working hard for the fair tax and speaking to unions and speaking to everyday working people to make sure we get out the vote for that.
All right, that's time. Thank you, Emiliano. You're up first for this next question. The governor recently gave his budget address, which included a progressive income tax. What are your views on his proposal and allocation of resources?
Well, we talked about this a little bit already, so I'll continue this. So we absolutely need this constitutional change for a progressive income tax, for a graduated income tax, for a fair tax, however you want to call it. It doesn't matter. Iowa and Missouri, Wisconsin, Minnesota, Michigan, and until 2018, Kentucky, all had a graduated income tax. And guess what? Working people there pay less in taxes than working people in Illinois. All of these Republican states around us, this should be something that we don't get the 60% of the vote needed. We don't get even a supermajority. We should be getting 99% of people in favor of this. The only people who should not be working for this is the 1% who it's taxing more and is asking to pay more. Now, I think that we have to fund our state institutions, believe in our state workers, and give our communities the funding that we need, that we have desperately, desperately lost under the 4 years of the Rauner administration. We have to not just refund the money that institutions like Western lost during those 4 years, but bring it back up to the levels that we had in the 70s when people could go to college for free and go to college and come out and stay in this community because they didn't have to go to a big city to afford to pay off their loans. There are a lot of things that we need to be doing with that money. We should also be paying off our debt, which we're barely even paying interest on. None of that is going to happen unless we vote for the fair tax. And I encourage every single person out there even if you're going to vote for Noreen Hammond in the general election, vote for the fair tax, because if you are making less than $250,000, you are getting a tax cut. This is in your best interest and
all right,
our best interest.
That's time. Scott, what are your views on the governor's proposal for progressive income tax?
Right. So I agree with quite a bit that Emiliano had said. You know, we cannot, it is to me unheard of to put the top 1% being taxed half of the amount that the bottom 20% income. It's outrageous to me to think that that would actually happen. And we're seeing it day in and day out, and it's hurting our families. It's hurting the middle and lower class consistently. We need this, we need it, the progressive income tax or progressive tax for many different things. One of them is what the governor had said in his budget, which is putting about $14 billion towards roads and bridges and the infrastructure. My car will tell you that the roads and the bridges are less than quality. And, you know, it's actually becoming a hazard to people. I worked as a 15, 16-year-old. I worked on road crews. My dad worked for 25 years on supervising road crews. I know how they're built. I know the safety precautions that that happen with this. So we need to put that money into our infrastructure, and we need to put the money back into the pockets of the middle and lower class with those tax breaks. It's an absolute that these large corporations and these independently wealthy folks that are sitting out there should not be paying less in proper or in income tax than somebody who is struggling day to day to not or paycheck to paycheck. You know, we can put up to, I believe it is, about almost $3.5 billion injected into vital services like child care, health care, and some of our hospitals, nursing rural access hospitals, and things of that nature. So it's vital that we vote for that in November, absolutely.
All right.
Thank you, gentlemen. Scott, we'll start with you with this next question. What legislation would you propose if elected to the Illinois General Assembly?
Well, one of the big pieces that I'm working off of is in healthcare. I work in healthcare. I see it day to day. The biggest thing, the biggest problem that I feel like we have right now is the fact that we have two lobbyists for every one legislator in Springfield right now. And you know where those lobbyists come from? They come from insurance companies and drug manufacturers. We need to get them out of this decision making. All it is doing is increasing premiums, increasing drug costs. We see it every day. I see it where somebody's gonna come in and they can't pay for their insulin, or they can't pay for this medication or that medication. They give it back to us because they can't pay for it. And there's nothing that pharmacies or rural access hospitals or clinics can actually do about that, because those levels are set by drug manufacturers and insurance companies. Oddly enough, we see, there's an insurance company out there right now, CVS Caremark. Well, that's odd, because there's a CVS retail pharmacy as well. Who do you think owns each other? They're in it, it's a vertical system, and it's got to end. We need to work on what our healthcare, we need to bring a better healthcare situation and solution to the people and give them some relief, because there's no reason that a mother of two or a family of five should have to declare bankruptcy because they can't pay for their health care bill that comes through, or pay for x-rays for their son because he got hurt in a ball game. There's absolutely no way. So health care is going to be a mandatory focus, and getting those lobbyists out of there are going to be an absolute must.
Thanks. Emiliano, what legislation would you propose if elected to the Illinois General Assembly?
Well, I would like to propose a healthcare bill that's a little bit more concrete than just saying that, oh, we have to do something about healthcare, because once again, if you look on Noreen Hammond's website, she'll say exactly the same thing. Healthcare costs are high. We need to bring them down for our working families. And I agree, but I have something that is actually concrete: a Medicare for all system in Illinois. Universal healthcare for every single man, woman, child, every single person in Illinois, given as a right, provided from the taxpayers, as every other developed country in the world has. And countries, people are going to say that this is expensive, that Illinois is broke. First of all, we know Illinois is not broke. Illinois is actually one of the largest economies in the world. Our millionaires and billionaires are just not paying their fair share. On the contrary, Illinois has a larger economy than a country like Denmark that does provide universal health care to every single one of its citizens as a basic, decent thing to do, because that's what you do when people are sick, and health care is something that every single person deserves. I've talked to far too many people who have ended up crying with me at the doorstep because they can't afford their $1,000 prescription for their husband. They can't afford to go to the doctor's office. They can't afford to take off work if they are sick. We need a universal healthcare system, as proposed, mind you, by two of the gubernatorial candidates in our last election. This is something that has been proposed in Illinois, that can be done here, and Illinois should lead the country in providing healthcare for every single one of our residents. And I've got 10 seconds left. So another thing that I would like to propose is the Clean Energy Jobs Act, which would invest heavily in our clean energy infrastructure to prevent climate change. And I would like to be a co-sponsor on that bill.
All right. So Emiliano, it's your turn to answer first. What will you do to make higher education more affordable in Illinois?
So the first thing is that we have to increase the funding for higher education to the levels that it was in the 70s and 80s when it was possible to go to Western and come out with little to no debt, when it was possible to go to college and actually be able to work your way through it. That is something that is impossible now to do because college has increased at vastly higher rates than actual wages have. So we need to make sure that people are earning enough, that they're earning a living wage that they could feasibly pay for college. We need to invest in our public universities and our public trade schools and in our high schools for college preparedness to make sure that people are not being stuck with a ridiculous bill for a job that they're going to have to leave our communities to be able to exercise. I got a lot of criticism when I moved back to this community with my master's degree. I had some people at church saying, why are you moving back here? Go to a city, go make money, and come back later, because you're not going to be able to do anything with your master's degree here. There are no jobs around for that. And I wanted to move back to this community because this is the community that I got scholarships from. I was able to go to college because of the people in this community. And I think we should be able to give that opportunity to everyone here and not just have them say, I would love to come, I would love to stay here, but there's no opportunities. So we have to be investing in our public education and at the very least do what already has been done and what got our parents, well, my parents, through college. Accessible, affordable education, funded publicly.
All right, Scott, what will you do to make higher education more affordable here in Illinois?
Well, the first thing I think that we need to do is we need to continue passing quality budgets for our schools. We saw what, as I said earlier, what happened with the budget impasse a couple years ago, and we saw how detrimental it was to this university in particular. And that set us back a couple years at least. You know, we saw people lose their jobs. And so a solid budget is going to go a long way into making sure that we're financially stable and our schools are financially stable beyond just a year or 2 years. Now, I agree, we need to fund our schools. Okay, we need to fully fund places like WIU, absolutely. We need to fund our MAP grants. You know, we have to put money into the schools in order to get out what we want with the students and degrees, and that's how we're going to keep people invested in here. We saw that, I believe it was just a month or two ago, we saw where retention was up here at WIU, and that's fantastic. That's what we need to continue to do, is to focus on retention, budgeting, putting money back into the schools, putting money into the MAP program, and coming up with new scholarships and opportunities that are publicly funded. We need to be able to put those through, absolutely. I think that, you know, when fully funded, you can see WIU is one of the top, if not the top, employer So you're adding jobs, you're increasing the opportunity, and furthermore, you're increasing the opportunity for when these students are finished with their degrees and graduate, that we can then have the opportunities with our economic development to get them in working jobs in our communities and staying in the state, because we're losing far too many people out of state for both jobs and for education.
All right.
So Scott, this next question's for you. We'll stay on the topic of higher education. What can the legislature do? What sort of legislation can be passed to recruit students to Illinois and retain students in Illinois' colleges and universities? Yeah.
Well, I just talked about the MAP program. I mean, that's a huge opportunity. That and enhanced scholarships that we can provide and create for our universities. So obviously with public funding, you know, when you get a budget and you've got your public funding available to you, there is the opportunity, excuse me, to create new scholarships for, you know, the multicultural scholarships to, you know, it could be band, it could be, you know, all the way across. We see scholarships for athletics, right? We don't see scholarships for some of the other things that we can put focus on in other departments. And that's where I think that if we can show that we have a program like what we're sitting in right now, we're sitting in a newsroom, and that's a fundable opportunity that people might be going out of state for, rather than staying in and then going to a local news network. So that's a perfect example of being able to provide money through, again, like I said, MAP and scholarship are the two main ones that I would focus on through legislation to make sure that with the new fair tax that will hopefully be passed in November, that we can budget for and appropriate for public higher ed, public funding education in your market for what, you know, MAP grants or anything else, or scholarships. I think those are the two main things that we really have to focus on.
Emiliano?
So I was a MAP grant recipient in my undergrad, as was my sister. My sister had to deal with the uncertainty and just mind-numbing worries of, is my MAP grant going to go through? And if not, where am I going to get these $3,000 or $4,000 that I would otherwise be getting for my school? She was already working two jobs. I was already helping her from my work while I was in college to help pay for her when the MAP grant issue came up. We absolutely have to fund MAP grants and other types of scholarships to make sure that before we pass any grand legislation, people are able to continue to go to college. But I think the larger goal, the thing that we should all be fighting for and not trying to negotiate and compromise away before we even hit the negotiating table, is expanding public education for everyone. And so that includes from public preschool and childcare and early education all the way to trade schools, two-year colleges, and four-year colleges. Once again, this is something that most every other democratic and developed country in the world does, is provide free public education. Once again, this is not a ridiculous cost. This is something that we can afford, and this is not an expense. This is an investment that we absolutely need. Other college towns have startups and small business cells and think tanks able to absorb their graduates. We need something like that investment for our community here in Macomb and for college towns all across Illinois to keep our students here.
All right, well, Emiliano, first 100 days in office, what would you be able to accomplish that you would be confident you could get passed?
So some bills that are already up in the legislature. So like I said, I would immediately and strongly support the Senator Andy Menard's Senate Bill 1 that would redistribute education funding and switch the formula so that education funding comes from the states rather than depending on unfair and unjust property taxes. Another thing that is up in the legislature right now is the Clean Energy Jobs Act, which is one of several green energy bills right now in the Illinois House, it's the best one that there is right now. And it's the one that goes the furthest to take seriously the threat that climate change poses, and also takes the opportunity to make Illinois a leader, not just in the United States, but in the entire world, of combating climate change and creating a just transition that sees our economy go from a carbon-based economy that threatens the existence of my generation and my students' generation to one that is proactively investing in our future with green energy, with the technology that we need. And some other things that I would like to see done are childcare, making, like I said before, universal childcare, making sure that we are able to fight for a faster increase to the minimum wage. This is one of the first issues that I was active in when I was active in politics, was on the front line picketing with workers for a higher minimum wage. That's something that we've been expected now to wait 5 years for and call that a victory. And I don't consider that necessarily a victory after inflation takes all of that out. And making sure to get the fair tax passed.
Okay, that's time. Scott, what are you confident on in your first 100 days in office you can get passed?
Well, what I can get passed. I think that, you know, somebody told me once, you don't know what you don't know. And I am an analytical person by nature, okay? And for me, I want to get in there and I want to get my hands dirty and I want to understand things like the budget. I want to understand why things are being done the way they're done. The only way you can fix things is to understand why they're being done in the first place. And of course, there's I have healthcare. Healthcare is a huge one for me to get involved in. I want to be on the committees. I want to reform our healthcare situation. Now, we talked about Medicare, you know, for our healthcare for all. I would love to see that as well. I think that's a grandiose idea right now, and I think we're just repeating, you know, things that we see on the national stage without really knowing it's not as rosy as everybody might walk in and think it is in Springfield on day one. So to me, it's hitting the ground running in healthcare. That's the number one thing that we need to do. We need to release the burden. So getting onto the committees that would facilitate that quicker. We need to get from point A to point B a lot sooner. We need to look at our budget, because quite honestly, what we're doing with our budget, we're not paying down our deficit right now. We need to get in there and figure out ways and look at our long-term debts and what our interest rates are on those, and find out ways to fix find a solution for these, to fix those problems. The opportunity that we have on the budget side is, budgets are tough. You have to really get involved with those and find out where the money's going, stop bleeding right away, and then work on what your passion projects are, which for me would be healthcare and education right off the bat.
All right. Well, we have reached that point where you can give 2 minutes of concluding statements, and we'll start with you, Scott.
Okay, great. Well, I want to take a moment to thank the League of Women Voters. I think this is fantastic. Thank you to you two as moderators today, and for everybody at home viewing, everybody that came out here to support Emiliano and I. And I also want to take a moment to recognize Mr. Vera. This opportunity we have in front of us is not an easy one. It's full of highs and lows. It's got challenges along the way. We've both taken our licks, and we've knocked on a lot of doors. So I want to commend him for his passion and determination. I think that, you know, it shows a lot of grit along the way. Now, that being said, only one of us can go to challenge Representative Hammond in November. I know I have the tools and the skills and the experience, and I've shown that will not only allow me to defeat her in November, but will allow us to hit the ground running in Springfield right away. I've spent my life leading people, whether it be in athletics or whether it be in city council or in my business. I've spent time leading. I'm a leader by nature, and that's what I love to do. And I will consistently lead people to the best outcomes that we can possibly get to. I've worked on infrastructure. I've worked on water, sewer, personnel projects, just to name a few. I've spent 10 years advancing our community and economic development in Rushville. I'm very proud of that. I've worked on the city boards to meet goals. We've increased revenue. We've increased our health entertainment, and more importantly, jobs. We've increased all of those things in our community, and I know that I can do this on a larger scale. I've shown that I can do it in a successful manner, and I'm just looking forward to moving forward in this and defeating her in November, and we have a real shot at new, fresh ideas, and I'm excited about that.
Emiliano?
So I am the only working class candidate in this race who is not being fueled by establishment parties, the same ones that every single person who I have talked to on the doors say are the real issue in this state and in this country. We have a district, we have a state in which about half of the people are not going to vote at all in this election because they feel like no one is sticking up for them, that both parties have thrown them under the bus for my generation, our entire lives. There are some people who do remember when the Democratic Party did genuinely stand for working people and would put their best interests first before the interests of corporations. Unfortunately, that's not the Democratic Party that we live in today. The mainstream of the Democratic Party has decided that corporate interests are more important than the interests of working people. I have been running since June, a strong campaign that got Noreen's people out knocking doors, knocking Democratic doors. And I would like to think that that was because that was her running scared from a challenger who was actually talking to real working people and someone who could do something that nobody else has done in the past several decades, and that is to get the working people out to vote. Now, your other option for the Democratic Party is a corporate businessman who has been completely funded by the Madigan Democratic machine that everyone purports to be the worst thing that has happened to this state. Even Democrats say that. So imagine the attack ads coming in November. Do you want to see someone attacking a teacher or someone attacking a corporate businessman?
All right. Well, we thank you both for helping voters learn your positions on these issues. Early voting is currently underway at the McDonough County Courthouse, and we have a list of the times and dates here on your screen. There are three Saturdays available for voters as well. You can vote inside the courthouse or at the Western Illinois University Union.
And if you have not registered to vote yet, you still have time. But we want to remind you of what you need to do in order to register. If you register in person, you'll need two forms of identification with at least one of them showing your current residence address, or you can go to the Illinois State Board of Elections website and register online. You'll need a valid Illinois driver's license or state ID when it was issued, the last four digits of your social security number, and birth date.
Our thanks to News 3's news director,
Emily Manley, and her student staff for making this broadcast possible. A special thank you to our two moderators, Rich Egger and Devin Brooks. We remind you that the League is nonprofit and nonpartisan. We don't endorse candidates. Our mission is to provide information to citizens so they make wise choices at the ballot box.
All right, well, we thank you for joining us this evening, and you can find a full list of the times, the schedule of when this program will rebroadcast on Channel 15 on our website at news3wiu.com. And you can also follow us on March 17th for the primary election when you can see the full results of the outcome of this race. Until then, we'll see you next time. Have a great night.